Today is Thursday, July 2nd, and this is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, citizens of Hong Kong face their new reality under harsh Chinese laws.
Really overnight, Hong Kong went from being a largely free society to one that many consider to be running now under authoritarian rule.
And rising tensions between France and Turkey over the war in Libya. Plus, raging forest fires in Brazil's Amazon rainforest. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is on the latest fallout in Hong Kong, where China imposed a harsh new security law. The law says those convicted of secession, subversion, terrorism, or collusion with foreign forces could face up to life in prison. On Wednesday, there were hundreds of arrests in Hong Kong as thousands of people took to the streets to protest the new law. Some in the international community are offering help to Hong Kongers. The same day the law came into force, Taiwan opened an office to help Hong Kong people who may wish to flee. China has condemned Taiwan's offer of help for Hong Kong's people. Beijing denies stifling Hong Kong's freedoms. Meanwhile, the United Kingdom is extending residency rights for up to 3 million Hong Kongers eligible for British national overseas passports, allowing them to live and work in the UK for 5 years. For more, Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
As the world watched new protests erupt in Hong Kong against a national security law introduced by Beijing, the UK and Taiwan have both offered assistance to Hong Kongers that wish to leave. The new law punishes crimes of secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces with up to life in prison. On Thursday, Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Australia will also offer support.
We do find these events very concerning, and we've been very clear about our statements that in concert with many other nations, this is not a position Australia has commented on in isolation. We've done so with many other like-minded countries about these events.
Morrison says they will offer safe haven visas to those who want to exit the former British colony, and said they were putting the final touches on the proposal. Authorities in Beijing and Hong Kong have repeatedly said the legislation is aimed at a few troublemakers and will not affect rights and freedoms. But critics fear it will crush freedoms and the city's independent legal system. The law has also drawn international outcry from the United States and the European Union, who have warned of serious consequences over the law. Britain said it would stand by its word and offer all those in Hong Kong with British national overseas status a special immigration route, where they can stay for 5 years to live and work in Britain. The BNO passports were created when Britain handed Hong Kong back to China 23 years ago. It follows the British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab's comments on Wednesday, accusing China of breaking its promises to the people of Hong Kong. Britain and Canada also updated their travel advisories for Hong Kong yesterday, saying there was an increased risk of detention. Speaking in Parliament, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said,
"The enactment and imposition of this national security law constitutes a clear and serious breach of the Sino-British Joint Declaration."
Hong Kong police arrested more than 300 people on Wednesday, the first day the law was in effect, as protesters turned out in the thousands calling for freedom. Police say 9 of the arrests were for violations of the new law.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan. U.S. leaders also condemned China's imposition of the new security law on Hong Kong. Here's Republican lawmaker Michael McCaul from Texas.
"This is a battle between democracy and dictatorship, between liberty and tyranny, and between freedom and oppression. And it is a battle that the world must win."
Top congressional Democrat Nancy Pelosi of California said she was concerned about ambiguities in the law, which was passed in secret without the input from Hong Kong authorities.
"Is it retroactive? Do they go back to any flying of the flags or making of statements? Or is it from now forward, which would be horrible enough? But that is a fear that I have.
The U.S. Senate unanimously passed a bill last week sanctioning officials, banks, and other entities who enable the new law, and more action is possible. But Democratic lawmakers say that U.S. leverage over China has decreased during the Trump administration. Here's New York Representative Elliot Engel, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
At the end of the day, it's the White House that sets policy, and I fear that our policy has gone astray, perhaps emboldening China.
For more on the new Chinese law and how it is impacting Hong Kong residents, earlier today I spoke to journalist Ria Mogul, who is in Hong Kong.
So, of course, on Wednesday, it was the 23rd anniversary of Hong Kong's return to Chinese rule. And for the first time, under the new reality of these national security laws. And it really was a day of defiance here in Hong Kong. Thousands of people took to the streets to oppose the implementation of the new law. And really, overnight, Hong Kong went from being a largely free society to one that many consider to be running now under authoritarian rule. You know, while everything might look the same, people are still going out to restaurants, you know, to shopping malls. Hong Kong's a very busy city. Underneath, everything has changed. You know, there's no longer any protection of speech, no longer any protection of assembly. And while the Hong Kong government has reiterated time and time again that these laws would only target just a minority of people, from what we saw yesterday, we know that to not be true. You know, more than 300 people were arrested in yesterday's clashes, about 10 of whom were arrested for doing something as simple as waving flags with independent slogans on them, you know? And if we look at the language of the law, it's written in a very vague way. So if you really think about it, anything under the sun that the CCP sees as being a crime of secession, subversion, foreign interference, terrorism, could lead to a maximum sentence of life in prison.
Now, what's it like for ordinary Hong Kongers?
People are fleeing Hong Kong. They're quite scared. You know, ordinary citizens are deleting their presence on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook. So there really is this fear. But at the same time, there's also this huge, you know, anger and frustration. And it was very obvious yesterday that people are angry and they took to the streets to show that. It is such an interesting dichotomy to see how scared people are, because they are trying to leave Hong Kong. There have been talks of people that have, since, you know, even the protests last year, have moved away to places like Australia and Canada. But at the same time, they're still very outspoken. They're still very vocal, and they still want to continue showing their solidarity with Hong Kong people, and they want to fight for their freedoms.
And what about the activists themselves? What's happening to them?
When it was announced that the law was passed on Tuesday, Joshua Wong, who is the poster boy of the pro-democracy movement here in Hong Kong, announced on his Twitter that he was stepping down from the political party that he was the secretary general of, Demasisto. And throughout the day, more and more people in that party announced that they were stepping down. And by the end of the day, they announced that the whole party was going to be disbanded. That being said, Joshua Wong was out marching on the streets yesterday and has publicly said that leaving Hong Kong for him is an absolute last resort, you know, and it had, there are rumors flying around that one of the first people that the CCP will, you know, arrest under these laws will be Joshua Wong. Nathan Law, who is also a pro-democracy activist, has reportedly left the country. So he's moved out of Hong Kong.
Now, U.S. lawmakers have been speaking out about what China is doing to Hong Kong. But at the same time, there's a lot of criticism because people are saying that the U.S. has lost credibility under Trump when it comes to China, and also lost credibility when it comes to human rights and freedoms generally, given the violent crackdowns against protesters in the U.S. So what's the view from Hong Kong on the U.S.?
Since the protests in the U.S. kicked off recently, there has been quite a fair bit of debate amongst the different protest camps. You know, the U.S. played a pretty instrumental role in last year's Hong Kong anti-government protests. Of course, they passed the Hong Kong Human Rights Democracy Act, and Donald Trump has reportedly called out China and have started to impose sanctions on the mainland and in Hong Kong. So what that's resulted in, really, are people saying that Hong Kong people online saying that, you know, we shouldn't condemn the U.S. and we shouldn't condemn the U.S. government, even though there is all of these protests happening in the U.S. as well. And then there's the other camp that says, you know, we really should condemn the U.S. So it just goes to show how these camps have such differing views. You know, some people really hold the U.S. and the government with very high regard because of their involvement in the Hong Kong political landscape, especially to do with the protests last year. Whereas other people say that, you know, we should still condemn all sorts of brutality and corruption. It's resulted in a fair amount of debate, a fair amount of, you know, fights online back and forth, just honestly really depicting how divided Hong Kong is at the minute and how polarized Hong Kong politics have become.
That was journalist Ria Mogul in Hong Kong. A landslide at a jade mine in northern Myanmar killed at least 100 people, with more feared dead, authorities said Thursday, after a pile of mining waste collapsed into a lake, triggering a wave of mud and water that buried scores of workers. Deadly landslides and other accidents are common in Myanmar's poorly regulated mines. Media have reported scores of people killed in the area in recent years, many of them freelance jade pickers who scour mine tailings for stones that have been missed by larger operators. Russian election officials say that 78% of voters have approved amendments to the country's constitution that will allow President Vladimir Putin to stay in power until 2036. Officials say that turnout exceeded 64%, but critics say the vote was tarnished by widespread reports of pressure on voters and other irregularities. Opposition figure Alexei Navalny says, quote, a record in falsifying votes has been set in Russia, end quote. The state-run Ethiopian Broadcasting Corporation says more than 80 people have been killed in unrest in Ethiopia after a popular singer was shot dead this week. The deaths, reported by police in the Oromia region, follow the killing of Hachalu Hundessa on Monday. Hachalu had been a prominent voice in anti-government protests that led to a change in leadership in 2018. Angry protests, including three bomb blasts, followed his death in the capital Addis Ababa. He is being buried Thursday in his hometown of Ambo. Police late Wednesday said three people have been arrested in connection with his death. A British judge has ruled that giving Venezuela control of $1 billion in gold stored in the United Kingdom's central bank would violate British law. The judge said he refused to grant Venezuela control of the gold because Britain does not recognize Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro as the country's legitimate leader. The case was brought by the Banco Central de Venezuela, which sought release of the gold to purchase food and other supplies. A lawyer representing the Banco Central de Venezuela said his clients would apply to appeal the ruling. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jason Patinkin. The World Health Organization says smoking is linked to a higher risk of severe illness and death from the coronavirus in hospitalized patients. The WHO noted that smokers represent up to 18% of hospitalized coronavirus patients, and that there appeared to be a significant link between whether or not patients smoked and the severity of disease they suffered, the type of hospital interventions required, and patients' risk of dying. In April, French researchers released a small study suggesting smokers were at reduced risk of catching COVID-19, but their findings were questioned by many scientists at the time who cited the lack of definitive data. WHO says, quote, the available evidence suggests that smoking is associated with increased severity of disease and death in hospitalized COVID-19 patients, end quote. It recommends that smokers quit. The United States has reported yet another record daily number of new coronavirus infections, over 50,700 cases, according to a tally being kept by Johns Hopkins University. The U.S. is experiencing a surge of new cases, especially in the South and West, as states have reopened their economies from coast to coast. The surge in new cases has been blamed in part on Americans not wearing masks or obeying social distancing rules. Despite the fact that the U.S. has the most confirmed coronavirus infections and deaths in the world, President Donald Trump did not appear very concerned, saying, quote, "At some point, that's going to sort of just disappear," end quote. India's number of coronavirus cases has passed 600,000. Its infection curve is rising, and its testing capacity is being increased. It has confirmed more than 19,000 cases in the past 24 hours and nearly 100,000 in just 4 days. Over 17,800 people have died. While most cases are centered in India's bigger cities, the backpacking destination of Western Goa State is open to tourists. They will either have to carry COVID-19 negative certificates or get tested on arrival. The French government is asking all companies to keep at least 10 weeks' worth of masks for their employees in case of a second wave of virus infections. Shortages of all kinds of masks were a major problem in France when the virus raced across the country in March and April, and are central to several lawsuits launched against authorities. Japan's capital city, Tokyo, has confirmed 107 new cases of the coronavirus, the highest since early May, raising concern about a possible resurgence of the disease just as businesses return to normal. Tokyo has asked hospitals to start securing up to 3,000 beds in case infections spread further. And in the Netherlands, sex workers welcomed customers back on Wednesday as the European nation further eased coronavirus measures. But sex workers and their clients were advised to avoid heavy breathing and kissing to help reduce the risk of transmitting COVID-19. Reuters' Soraya Ali reports.
Dutch sex worker Moira Mona is preparing to welcome back customers as the Netherlands further eases its restrictions. Alongside her usual latex outfits, she'll now have a leather face cover and black gloves to comply with new protocols. Sex workers already adhere to strict health and safety regulations in the Netherlands, but the industry has compiled a list of recommendations, including sex positions to avoid. Public health advisor Debbie Mensik explains.
We advise them to avoid being too close to each other's faces or feeling each other's breath. The intention is to not breathe out onto each other's face. We're also advising them not to kiss, because this suggests an exchange of saliva. The virus could be in the saliva and thus be transmitted.
Mensik also added that even with these new guidelines, sex workers will still be more exposed to the dangers of COVID-19 than other professionals. Amsterdam's red light district is usually bustling with thousands of tourists wanting to see sex shows, workers and erotic gift shops. But now the streets have been deserted. Erotic dancers and sex workers lost their main source of income for 3.5 months and generally did not have access to state support. Mona made some income during lockdown by doing webcam shows, but said if the measures had remained in place much longer, she would have spent her entire savings. Now she says she will work with caution.
I don't get unemployment benefits if I get sick. So when someone starts coughing or sneezing in my hallway, I say, sweetheart, could you come back another time? Because I don't feel like doing this. Because if I'm out of the running for a week, I earn no money for a week.
Thanks to Reuters' Soraya Ali for that report. Parts of Australia's second biggest city of Melbourne have gone back into COVID-19 lockdown following a surge in cases. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
With 73 infections, Victoria has accounted for almost all of the national tally of new COVID-19 cases in the past 24 hours. Failures in the hotel quarantine program are being blamed. Travellers returning to Australia from overseas face a mandatory 14 days in isolation. The state government has said that breaches in security have been linked to the spread of the disease in parts of Melbourne. Health officials have said the surge in infections was heartbreaking. More than 300,000 people will face legally enforceable restrictions on their movement as dozens of suburbs are once again placed into lockdown. The Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews is warning that the pandemic won't be over for a long time and says strict lockdown measures are needed.
The Chief Health Officer has advised me to reimpose restrictions, so they will be stay-at-home orders and they will run for 4 weeks. There will only be 4 reasons that you are permitted to leave your house, and only if you really have to: for work or school, for care or caregiving, for daily exercise, for food and other essentials.
Fines of about $1,000 could be imposed if residents leave their homes without good reason. They're also banned from travelling to neighbouring New South Wales. Anyone from a virus hotspot in Melbourne who tries to cross the border in defiance of public health orders could face a fine of almost $7,500 or up to 6 months in prison. Disease control measures in New South Wales are being eased. Museums, libraries and some cinemas can now reopen, while more passengers are allowed on public transport. Queensland is also planning to reopen its borders to other Australian jurisdictions in 10 days' time, although travellers from Victoria will face restrictions. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Tensions continue to rise between France and Turkey regarding the war in Libya. Paris announced Wednesday it was leaving NATO's maritime surveillance operation in the Mediterranean to protest Turkish actions. Journalist Nicolas Pinot has more from Paris.
The defense ministry said France will no longer take part in the NATO operation until it gets a response to its concerns over the behavior of Turkey. Earlier this month, France denounced an extremely aggressive intervention by Turkish ships against a French Navy vessel participating in a NATO mission in the Mediterranean, a claim Ankara dismissed as groundless. And now, Turkey wants Paris to apologize for false accusations. Earlier this week, French President Emmanuel Macron accused Turkey of criminal responsibility in Libya, while Ankara slammed France's destructive approach. Paris accuses Ankara of shipping arms to Libya in defiance of a UN embargo, as well as sending in thousands of pro-Turkey Syrian militia fighters fresh from the conflict there. It's a new escalation of a growing dispute between the two countries. Paris and Ankara have exchanged bitter barbs over the last days concerning the conflict in Libya, with both sides accusing each other of stoking bloodshed in the North African country. Ankara supports the UN-recognized Government of National Accord, GNA, in the Libya conflict against rebel strongman Khalifa Haftar. France is suspected by analysts of backing Haftar alongside Egypt, Russia and the United Arab Emirates, but insists it is neutral in the conflict. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News in Paris.
The number of fires in Brazil's Amazon rainforest rose 20% in June to a 13-year high for the month, government data showed Wednesday, as researchers worry that it could signal a repeat of last year's surge in forest fires. Reuters' Gloria Tso reports.
High above Brazil's Amazon rainforest, patches of scorched earth are bringing attention to an alarming problem. Raging forest fires, which rose 20% last month and are putting the lives of dozens of indigenous tribes at serious risk. The fires, which are set to clear land after trees have been cut down, have environmentalists like Romulo Batista worried about the dangers of increasing deforestation.
From January to May this year, we've had more than 650,000 hectares with a deforestation alert, according to the National Institute for Space Research. That is 78% higher than last year.
The indigenous tribes of the Amazon now face the double threat of an environmental and public health crisis. Health experts fear the smoke, which blankets the forest during the dry season and causes respiratory problems, could also provide further complications for patients with COVID-19. The disease has battered indigenous communities living in the region, tribes which have no immunity to external diseases and live a communal lifestyle that rules out social distancing. Carlos Souza Jr. of the nonprofit Amazon explains.
The clearing of land already represents a serious health problem. If we have land clearing and COVID-19 together, this could bring catastrophic consequences for the residents of the region.
Environmentalists largely blame the increasing destruction of the rainforest on the policies of right-wing President Jair Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro deployed the Brazilian armed forces to protect the Amazon in May, but deforestation is still on the rise. He has called for more farming and mining in protected areas of the Amazon while defending the country for still preserving the majority of the rainforest. The Amazon Environmental Research Institute predicts that at the current pace of deforestation, some 9,000 square kilometers of the Amazon will be cut down by the end of this month.
Thanks to Gloria So of Reuters for that report. That's it for our show today. Thank you for listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.